I'll put it this way, in specific terms, what needs to be done and who should be involved in working to reduce violence in Lexington?
We need to bring in an overarching plan that gets community leaders, judges, officers, and elected officials all working together to address these problems. Specifically, this means creating a system that identifies individuals before they cause these second and third instances of violence, these retaliatory violent crimes, and making sure that we have wraparound services to give people the opportunity and hope to get out of these situations. That includes jobs, mental health, and any of the support networks that we can have with our local nonprofits. So it's really going to take a comprehensive approach with a lot of people in order to help us reduce the violence we're seeing today.
And is that what you just described? Is that basically GVI? Is that what that is?
It is. That is GVI. We don't always talk about it in, you know, terms of the initialism because it seems too abstract. When we're talking about policies like getting officers out of their patrol cars and walking through neighborhoods, that resonates with people because we understand, oh, it's going to be community policing. We're going to have the police knowing who we are. We can form that relationship. So there's a lot of amazing principles in GVI. I generally try to just break it down to what that really means for people moving forward.
Okay. Now I'm going to, as you expect, kind of jump around to all kinds of different things. So here's one that I wouldn't say it's going to throw you or the mayor for that matter, but it's one that hasn't recently been discussed as much. So I want to make, maybe I'll wait till the fire trucks go by a little bit. But there have been over the years, and this is way over the years, off and on long-standing conversations about the possibility of building a new city hall. So should that still be considered an option where we are today?
Absolutely. The costs that we incur staying in that building. It was supposed to be temporary in the 80s when we moved into this hotel and turned it into a government center. And yet we're still there paying millions of dollars of taxpayer money just keeping up the facilities. We could take those costs and get a new facility, purchase another building, do a renovation. We could do so many things right now to get us out of that, and we need to, because it's fiscally irresponsible for us to stay in that building any longer.
Why do you think, I guess I'll toss it, why do you think that you are, I mean, the government is still in that building today? Why do you think we're still there?
Well, you know, there's always the idea of what's going to be the most appealing right now, instead of looking at long-term. And reducing your costs and investing in an infrastructure project in the future isn't always something that resonates the most with people today. When someone says, hey, let's do this new social program, or let's reduce our costs so that we can sustain a social program, those two things really hit differently. So I think what we need to do is make sure we have that long-term view, because our finances are not going to keep up if we keep throwing funds into the maintenance of something that is obviously a money pit.
Right. You know, one other question about this, because the other day, you know, there was scaffolding in the lobby.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was for some painting. I guess that's what it was, I think that's what it was for.
There was some, there was also some sewer issues. I know that the water fountains above the second floor were all turned off. Mm-hmm. So they're doing some work.
Okay. So there's, but Richard happened to be coming through there at the time, and we know how Richard is.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that, I said, well, you know, I kind of kiddingly said, well, this scaffolding's up here to hold up the building. You know, that's what I think, to hold up the building. And he laughed and he said, you know, I used to walk through on a Friday, and he said his point was that there are people working from home, and there's not as many people in the building, and it takes less time. So I guess that's a way of saying, could you build a much smaller city hall too?
Absolutely. The thing is, we don't need all of the departments consolidated in one place downtown. You know, we need to make sure that we have access for the public to come and see council, to come to meetings, to interact with the mayor, and have the commissioners in that place. But a lot of those departments are self-sufficient. A lot of them are able to work from home. And right now, I've been pushing a space study for us to actually figure out how much space we need. Because I know a lot of the previous examples of building giant new buildings have been all under the premise of let's consolidate everything in one place. Well, that might not be the most economically feasible, and it's certainly not the thing that's going to get us moved out of there quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So moving to staffing challenges at the jail, the police department, E911, do you see a time when full and stable staffing can be a part of those departments?
Well, we have to, right? It's important. Those are vital for our city. And to get from where we are today to there is going to take some time. It's going to take some time and some intentionality, because we need to make sure that what we're doing is having an effect in the long term, not just as a short-term band-aid. We can't always just throw money at a problem and expect it to be solved overnight. These issues took us several years to get to. The pandemic didn't help, but what we can do now is assess what are the benefits and long-term planning that we can have to entice people to come here. Does that mean we need to have laterals? We need to look at other districts where we could get officers, correction, police, E911 to come work here. Does this mean that we need to implement a 36-month buyback on rookie contracts so that the people that we train are incentivized to stay here longer instead of taking this excellent training we have and going and getting new jobs elsewhere? And does that mean that we should be looking towards people getting close to their retirement and incentivizing them to stay for longer, perhaps with a program that gives them a one-time lump sum if they do commit to 3 to 7 more years of service? These are all policies that don't have a large financial impact on the city, but would have a large impact on our retention and recruitment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that you would see that as kind of a, like you say, not a quick fix. It'd take a while to do that.
Yes. Any plan that we put in place is going to take a while to unwind what we've seen happen over the last several years. So, yeah, we have to start moving in the right direction if we're going to see these changes.
Okay. Affordable housing, I wasn't here for the I guess you want to call them protesters, calling for the rental bill of rights? I guess, was that the term, rental bill?
The tenant's bill of rights.
Tenant's bill of rights, mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you feel about that? I mean, in what can or should, does the government have a role in that?
So I am a landlord, and I do support a tenant's bill of rights. These things can go hand in hand, because the underlying premise is that we make sure people have a fair shot at housing and are not being discriminated against. I put one of the items from that Bill of Rights into committee, which has to do with income discrimination. We find in some places people who accept Section 8 vouchers will deny someone based on the fact that they have a Section 8 voucher, or they'll deny someone based on the fact that their income source is from child support or alimony. These aren't things that our landlords should be discriminating about. You know, if you set a price for someone to stay in your property, that should be the price. There's a reason we have the Fair Housing Act. It was to get us to remove these kind of discriminations. And the protections that are asked for in this Tenants' Bill of Rights really just go to taking that act into the 21st century.
Hmm. Okay. But I guess really, as far as the rental rates, what they are and where they've gone, you can't roll those back. I mean, that's not really something government can really do, is for affecting the rates, right? I mean,
those rates have, first off, the Tenants' Bill of Rights doesn't have anything to do with the actual rates or cost. Mm-hmm. This is just protections for people who are otherwise disenfranchised in a lot of situations. When we're talking about trying to address the increase we've seen, which has been one of the largest in the country over the last year, in these rental costs, the city can't take a direct stake in that. We can't instruct, force, or moderate individuals to lease their properties or rent their properties for different amounts. But what we can do is affect the overall market structure. We have a say in how development proceeds in our community. And those kind of levers are where the government can stay in their own lane and adjust where those market influences go. And by doing that, we have an effect. Obviously, it's not a heavy-handed approach. It's one that takes intentionality and, again, time. But we do have an ability to adjust and help with some of those, we'll call them increased rental costs or inflationary measures, yes.
Right, okay. On sewer work, again, that's been going on for a long time, you know, more than a decade. Is there a light, I wrote down here, trying to be funny, is there a light at the end of the sewer pipe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the consent decree, which we've been under for a long time, we've actually made some great progress. We've been ahead of schedule and under budget, and I'm happy to say that we're on the right track. It will still take several years for us to get to the end of every requirement placed on us by the EPA for that consent decree to deal with all of our water, but we're getting there. And as I said, we're ahead of schedule and below budget.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you think when you get there, will there be good enough for a number of years? You know, people probably wonder, are you going to, you know, maybe 5-10 years down the road start digging again?
Well, the only reason we ended up under a decree from the federal agency was because we deferred this kind of maintenance for so long. Now that we've gotten up to pace, it's just a matter of keeping up with it at a normal pace. It should not be nearly as expansive going forward. You know, hopefully a stitch in time saves nine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Traffic congestion. You know, Lexington's growing still a number of people. So I think there's this, perception that we got more people, we got to have more cars, we're going to have more traffic and more tie-ups. So what do we do about that?
Well, you know, I wish we could go back to when the roads were first planned and not just follow the old Buffalo trails. I think that'd be the first thing. But since we have the infrastructure we do with this spoken hub, we have to be very mindful about where people live, where the population goes. And I think that that's one big thing the city can do with their planning that can help alleviate some of the pressures on our roads. Good example, Nicholasville Road has over 10,000 cars that come down it every day. And a large portion of them are coming down to the hospitals, down on campus, and in the surrounding area. Well, we have two new hospitals being built right out by the interstate near Winchester Road. If we're intentional with our planning and build housing, and we make sure there are communities nearby those hospitals, we can eliminate some of that traffic on Nicholasville Road from people who are having to commute from Jessamine County if we had affordable housing close to the interstate. These kind of things, again, are you have to look at the whole city as one big organism, as one big picture. But by being intentional about where we build up our populations and don't just try to force as much population onto the infrastructure that is already struggling to handle it, we can account and reduce some of that traffic throughout the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think the only other thing was about, I wanted to ask about art. The art scene. So my question would be, do we currently have a satisfactory art scene in Lexington, considering all forms, you know, public art, music, theater, visual arts? I mean, I think it's fair to say we're known as having an interest in art. How do you think we are where we need to go?
We do have a lot of variety. You know, the Opera House, which has been operating with their trust for many years, brings in a lot of shows that we otherwise couldn't get into that venue. We've had a very strong support from our community to have the arts be in more places in our schools, specifically with LexArts. I helped work with them on the horse play initiative where we got these model horses to the schools, let the children paint them and auction them off in order to raise money for the school system to help further the arts. I think that, as you said, our city is very well steeped in appreciating the arts of all kinds, you know, visual, musical, etc. I think that's only going to grow and continue as we move forward. And I always tell people, you know, especially with our children, we teach our children to read and write, and that's very important. But they need things to read and write about, and that's why we invest in the arts.